MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
South Africa has a new living wage benchmark, and I think it is likely to spark a fierce debate. Now, the Living Wage or South Africa Network says workers should be taking home at least 20,000 rand a month for a 40-hour week if they are to live with basic dignity, maybe save a little, and also cope with emergencies. But here's the rub, I think. In a low-growth economy with many businesses already under immense, huge pressure, is this realistic and is it completely unaffordable? Let's discuss this in a little more detail. I'm in conversation with Dr. Mark Buesen from the Living Wage Network. Mark, a very warm welcome. 20,000 rand a month take-home pay is a big number in the South African context. Tell us how you reached that figure. Why is that a living wage right now?
Thank you, Jeremy. Yes, it is a big number. And the way we reached it was a methodology that is used around the world. We interviewed 2,000 plus, so just over 2,000 people, and asked them questions around 13 factors. I can list them for you, but it's things like housing, neighborhood, employment, quality of working life, and so on. And asked them, what would give you a dignified lifestyle? What would put you in a position where you could save a bit of money and not worry about money? The range was between 14 and 25,000 rand a month take home, and we settled on 20,000 as the Living Wage Network.
Your research then says people below 14,000 rand struggle to live decently. Those above 25 generally can. Was there a lot of argument in settling on that 20,000 rand?
No, there wasn't, because the 20,000 rand was among the Living Wage Network members ourselves, the executive members ourselves. We came to the conclusion that 20,000 would be a good number. And most folk that we spoke to said that would be a reasonable number to consider.
Is this figure, Mark, meant to apply nationally, or does it maybe risk ignoring major differences, say, between Johannesburg and rural and smaller provinces where maybe there is more or pronounced economic disparity?
That's a great question, which we are wrestling with at the moment, to be honest. So if you take the UK Living Wage Network, for example, they do take London, for example, as more expensive than one of the towns or cities outside in the UK. A lot of the international folk do take cost of living of various cities into account. At this stage, it's a national number for ourselves. With more resources, more sponsorship, more money, we could then extend this the research to various places in South Africa and see if there is indeed a geographic difference. But right now, it is a national number.
And explain to me how a living wage is different from the national minimum wage beyond it simply being higher at 20,000 rand.
The minimum wage is government legislated, and it is around 5,000 rand a month. It's a bit different from that, but let's say around 5,000. This is four times the amount, 20,000. It is not legislated. It's not compulsory, whereas the minimum wage is government mandated. It is compulsory. You do have to do it. So we don't talk about the living wage as an absolute number. It's a journey. So those folk that can't do it, I personally believe that employment and jobs is much more important. We don't want people to be implementing this 20,000 and then retrenching half of their workforce. So it's a voluntary amount, and if one can afford it and one is able to do it, then one should.
Even if you're not being prescriptive, do you think that pushing for 20,000 rand could unintentionally lead some employers, maybe in smaller or medium-sized businesses, to hire fewer people, automate faster, or simply outsource work, given that you've now put this debate front and center?
It is possible that that happens. That would be a very sad and unintended consequence. It's not meant to pressurize folk. It's not meant to make people feel that they should be doing it and hiring fewer people. I think the cousin of this is employment and job loss. We need to look at the two together. This is not instead of jobs. So I'd be very, very sad if folk were hiring less. I'd be very sad if folk did see it as that. But one can't exclude the possibility. You're spot on there.
And Mark, to the question about maybe idealism, how would you answer employers who say this is morally attractive, but commercially impossible and simply not viable?
We'd have to accept that, because the idea is not to put businesses out of business. The idea is not to create unemployment. But, you know, when we look at the UK statistics, 1 in 7 employers is a living wage employer. We are nowhere near that, but we're not zero. We do have, according to our estimations, more than 25 organizations that are already a living wage employer. So those that can, should, and it's a good thing and the right thing to do, but those that can't and cannot and commercially cannot, then they shouldn't. But it's an aspirational number and it's a journey.
The network goes on to argue, as I read it, that this ultimately is an investment and not a cost. Is there any evidence, Mark, that shows that better pay improves productivity enough to justify your thinking?
So the Living Wage Network itself does have evidence. I work another hat in the academic world, and happier employees, employees that are not worried about their financial security and safety, are generally more productive. So it's a sweeping generalization, that, and can one generalize that to absolutely everybody? No, I'll find you an overpaid worker who's not productive. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, the less worried I am, the new word is wellness. If I'm well, I am generally more productive. If I'm more productive, I'll be easy to retain. And if I'm easier to retain, the company should perform better.
We've discussed living wage versus minimum wage, but in respect of the living wage, do you think at any point government might have a role here? Or do you think turning this into regulation simply destroys the voluntary spirit of the idea?
I hope it never becomes legislation, because if we legislated 20,000, it would be, I think, catastrophic for the country. The role that government could play is to create enabling policies that help our organizations grow, that help the economy grow. If we can get to a GDP growth of 4, 5, 6% by just changing just a handful of laws, that makes it easier for organizations to comply. Maybe we might not be 1 in 7, but we could be 1 in 10, and that's really the goal.
And just finally, is there a practical step, Mark, that a South African employer might want to take if they accept your argument and principles but simply cannot reach the 20,000 rand immediately?
To keep an eye on it, to talk about it, to compile budgets in parallel to the current budgets. What would it look like? Do scenario planning, what ifs, modeling. They do modeling all the time. How could we do it? It's just to get the debate going and to get people thinking about it. And if that is the first step, and if that's a practical step, then we've achieved something.
We'll follow this with a great deal of interest. Dr. Mark Buessen from the Living Wage South Africa Network, thank you very much.